Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. And this episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, the home for the best football fantasy games, as well as a lot of great articles from writers such as Chloe Beresdorf, John Solano, Enrico Passarella, and yours truly as well. So today we have a lot to talk about. This week has been dominated by the story of Bonucci potentially returning to Juve. We're definitely going to talk about that. Talk about the situation with Malcolm, who was all set to join Roma only to head to Barcelona. We'll discuss that with our great friend John Solano towards the end of the podcast. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our co-host, producer Alex Goldberg, who did another fantastic video today. All you Chelsea fans, definitely check those out. They're really great. So, Alex, before we get into Bonucci and all the drama, I wanted to ask you about two strikers that have been linked to Milan, and in a way, they do relate to your team, Chelsea, a little bit, more than a little bit, as well. And this is Morata and Higuain. So today, Leonardo, Milan's new sporting director, was introduced, kind of denied the possibility of either of those arriving. You guys have been listening to the podcast for a while, know that you should take all statements on transfers with a grain of salt. Milan's definitely in the mix to try to bring in one of those two. So let me ask you, Alex, in an ideal world, which one, if you were running Milan, which one of those two players would you rather have, Higuain or Morata?
Honestly, David, Higuain, absolutely Gonzalo Higuain right now. And that more has to do with the fact that I have never wavered in terms of how I feel about Gonzalo Higuain. I think he's a very good striker. I think he's kind of in that second tier. I don't think he's necessarily up there with a Harry Kane or a Robert Lewandowski, but I definitely think he's in that second tier. But my answer is more so based on how I feel about Alvaro Morata right now. I've had an up and down relationship with Alvaro Morata. When he arrived at Chelsea, I was super excited, as were many Chelsea fans, because I always felt he was a lot better than necessarily how many starts he accumulated in his career before that. Obviously impressed at Juve and did have his moments at Real Madrid, and I felt he was just waiting to break out and become a star striker. Things started off really well, and then all of a sudden, boy, did it go downhill. There might have been a couple factors. First off, it is tough when you don't score in the Premier League. The Premier League fans are unlike any others sometimes in terms of how much they can get on you, and a lot of it is sometimes unreasonable, and I was one of them. But also, he kept citing an injury, and that may have been valid or not, but the flopping. He flopped around like a fish for almost 6 months. And then I thought to myself, coming into this season, well, I want Alvaro Morata still on Chelsea. He's still only 25. He will turn 26 soon, so he's not even that young these days anymore. But I thought, all right, under Maurizio Sarri, he'll look good, and he'll be better a second year. And David, I hate to be a prisoner of the moment because preseason games mean nothing, but he played on Monday, and I wasn't expecting a great performance, but I needed to see one change. I needed to see him not flop and have a different mentality. And he did not have that. He kept falling down. He kept looking for a call in a preseason game against Perth from Australia. I mean, that is ridiculous. So right now, I like Alvaro Morata still as a person, and I do like what he has to offer as a player. But his mentality as a footballer is very concerning. So I'm definitely taking Gonzalo Higuain because, honestly, I don't know if it's worth it for Milan to pay what they supposedly would have to pay for Morata. And one more factor for everybody to consider when it comes to Alvaro Morata. We know how much confidence means to a striker. Now, think about this. A year ago, Alvaro Morata was the first choice striker for Spain, okay? And then things went poorly for him at Chelsea. Who became the first choice striker for Spain after Morata played poorly for Chelsea? Diego Flippin' Costa, who was the starting striker for Chelsea before Morata came. So I honestly think that was another hit on Morata's confidence. Oh my God, the Chelsea fans don't like me anymore. They want Costa back. And now all of a sudden, Costa is the starting striker again for Spain, and he had a pretty good World Cup. So David, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm very worried about the mentality right now of Alvaro Morata. And as much as Gonzalo Higuain has been through getting backlash for missing important goals, he continues on, and he's still a damn good striker. So I'm absolutely taking El Pepita. David, what's your take?
Wow, I love the passion. You can get, if you enjoyed that rant, you'll love all of Alex's videos. So, I really like Morata. I'm a big fan of his. You know, last season was rough, for sure. I definitely expected much more from him. We don't know how much injuries were a factor in it, but long and short of it, it was very disappointing. Now, if I'm looking at it from Milan's perspective, on one hand, Morata is younger. Transfer fee wise, we're looking at around about the same 65-70 million euro. Juve wouldn't take a loss on Higuain's amortized value, so we're looking at around 60 million for him as well. The wages, actually, surprisingly, I think Higuain would be a little bit cheaper. But that aside, I think, you know, Morata really strikes me as someone who needs a fresh start, different scenery. He loves Italy. He's been pushing a return there. I think it wouldn't be a disaster if he goes to Milan, but I think Higuain's much more of a sure thing. In Serie A, he's been sensational. Yeah, he hasn't been that clutch on the international stage, and I'm being generous here, but he had some huge goals for Juve last season. When you look at Milan, that's exactly what they've been lacking the past two seasons. All the teams that have finished ahead of them in the standings have a bona fide striker that you can get 15 to 20 goals for sure each season. Right now, Milan doesn't have a player like that. Cutrone had a good season, but I'm not sure you can project him into someone who would score 15 to 20 goals for sure going into the season. So Higuain would like to stay in Italy. I could see this being a good match if it happens. I just think Higuain would be such a sure thing for Milan. You bring him in, he would be someone that can help him bridge the gap with the team ahead of him for a Champions League spot.
Yeah, I think he's just the way sure bet, Higuain, especially after last year of getting Andre Silva, who didn't really impress Milan all that much. I'm not saying Morata's on that level, but I don't think the way Milan is going and the way they want to move forward, that they can honestly take a risk in Morata compared to someone like Higuain, who's been playing damn good in Serie A. So, David, about a month ago, we talked about the transfers that had already happened in Serie A. We took a good look at that at the time, but a whole nother month has passed. So how about this? Let's take some stock of some players that have come in and left Serie A.
Excellent. Well, this is a fun segment for me because I really like to look at the league as a whole. So I'm going to read out the players that have come in from abroad to Serie A and then read out the players that left the league. And I'm going to let the listeners decide if they think Serie A's talent level has improved so far. Granted, we have another 3 weeks or so of transfers. There are some more Serie A players who could leave, but let's take stock as to where we are right now. So some of these names have been done deals for a while, but I think it's important to look at it kind of the whole picture. So coming in, we have Lautaro Martinez, highly rated prospect from South America who joined Inter, has had a very good preseason and seems to have a great partnership with Icardi so far. Then we had Emre Can sign with Juve on a Bosman transfer. We've had Roma bring in four players from abroad, and actually five when we count goalkeeper Olsen, but they had brought in four others in Pastore, Kluivert, Čorić, and defender Marcano. We had Bologna bring in striker Santander. We had Sampdoria bring in defender Coley from the Belgian league. We had Lazio bring in Berisha and Durmisi from Austria and Spain, respectively. Today, it's not official yet, but they are going to bring back Correa, who played for Sampdoria and was in Spain. We had a Fiorentina sign goalkeeper Lafont, fantastic keeper if you play FIFA or Football Manager. We had Napoli bring in Fabian Ruiz. We had, of course, the big one, Cristiano Ronaldo joining Juve. We had Atalanta completing a deal for Pasalic, who I think is a very intriguing move for them. I could see them really having a good season for Gasperini. We had Cagliari brought in Cerna, the former captain of Croatian national team. We had Genoa bring back Crisito to Serie A from Russia. We had Torino bring in two players from abroad, Brazilian wingback Bremer, and they brought in Mete from Monaco. We had the return of Boateng to Serie A. He's now at Sassuolo. And as a manager, we, of course, have Carlo Ancelotti back in Serie A. So those are the main additions. There were some others, but these are really the main figures to come back to Serie A. Now let's look at the outgoing side of things. We had Messina, the left back from Bologna, go to Watford. We have Nani's loan with Lazio expired. He really didn't do too much. We had Lichtsteiner join Arsenal. We had Rafinha go back to Barcelona. We have, of course, Torreira going to Arsenal, Jorginho going to Chelsea. We, of course, have Alisson at Liverpool. Speaking of goalkeepers, we have Buffon at PSG. We had defender Bruno Gaspar leave Fiorentina. We had left back Barreca leave Torino. We, of course, had Felipe Anderson join West Ham, and we had Eder going to China. On the manager side, of course, we have Sarri finally at Chelsea. So that's the list. If I miss someone, please let me know with the CalcioLand hashtag. I'm going to ask our listeners to think for themselves if they think the talent level has improved in the league or not. And one thing's talent level that we can always count on are the fantastic questions from our listeners. We really want this podcast to be interactive. We want to give the people what they want. So please keep sending us questions on transfers, Serie A, journalism, TV, music, and film. So which ones are we going to go over today?
All right, David, let's start off with a very popular topic in Serie A right now. What's the latest on Bonucci to Juve?
Yeah, this story really is something else. And it's interesting that both directors, Marotta and Leonardo, are speaking about this so publicly. Marotta yesterday already gave some comments about Bonucci being the driving force for this transfer. He really wants to return to Juve, something Leonardo confirmed today in his introductory press conference. Like right off the bat, I have a very hard time imagining Bonucci going back to Milan after his own sporting director said that he wants to join Juve. So this is where the situation stands now. Juve is all about looking for opportunities on the transfer market, and a player like Bonucci, and I think right now, you know, I get there's a lot of emotion on both sides for Bonucci, but look, you know, he's definitely an elite center back. I definitely think he would be a big improvement for any team, and it makes sense to me that Juve, although they're stacked at his position, are looking to find ways to bring him back. But they don't want to invest any cash in this. They want to find some players to include in the deal. The thing with Bonucci is bringing him in, even if you're not putting out a transfer fee, is a very substantial salary. We've talked a lot about this, how gross wages, so wages before taxes, impact teams' books. With Bonucci, you're looking at anywhere between 15 to 18 million a season going on Juve's books. So they don't want to pay any cash. They are willing to offer players. They would love to do, you know, kind of a swap with Higuain, with maybe Milan paying the difference for the amortized value. So Higuain's worth a little bit over 60 million. So Milan paying 25 million, the odds of that happening are slim to none. So they're discussing other players, and the player that Milan has zeroed in on is Caldara, the center back that Juve brought back from Atalanta. I think it's a very interesting detail that Caldara's agent, Rizzo, who has represented a lot of some Atalanta players, has been very involved in the talks. You can read that in a lot of different ways. I think, you know, if you look at it, that maybe Caldara would prefer to go to Milan, where he would be guaranteed playing time. He could form with Romagnoli a really good partnership for quite some time. That might also help him with the national team. Maybe that's a factor there, especially playing at Juve on a defense that would have for sure Chiellini and Bonucci if that deal happens. You got to wonder how much he would play. So that's the latest. It looks like the clubs now are talking about how much they should value Caldara and Bonucci. It's also important to note that the difference in salaries is staggering between the two players. So definitely a situation to look at further. Juve has discussed maybe including Chiacca, a player that Milan had pursued before. So let's see what happens. My guess, though, is Bonucci will be back at Juve, I'm not sure which players are going to be heading the other way. But after the public statements from Leonardo today, I have a very hard time seeing how Bonucci could go back to Milan.
All right, David. Well, an appropriate follow-up is, who would win the deal if Caldara heads to Milan and Bonucci goes to Juve?
So this has been very interesting. And I think, look, I think Caldara is very, very good. I haven't watched him a ton, but the matches I have seen him in, he's impressed me. And I certainly consider him a better player than, say, Rugani, based on what I saw here. But I think, too, it's pretty easy to overrate, you know, these young players that are promising. You know, I even had someone tweet me that Caldara was the best center back in Serie A last season. I mean, no offense, that's a gross exaggeration. But the way I look at it, let's say the deal is Caldara for Bonucci and, you know, accounting whatever way they decide to make the numbers work. I think you have to look at it that Milan and Juve are in very different stages right now. Juve is completely in win mode now after spending so much on Ronaldo. The goal is clearly to win the Champions League. I mean, I simply ask myself, if Juve was playing in a big Champions League match, would I rather Bonucci or Caldara start? I mean, it's a no-brainer to me right now. I think, you know, a lot of people are forgetting how good Bonucci was for Juve. It wasn't just in the three-man defense, had some really good games in the four-man defense. I thought in the second half of last season for Milan, he was really good. So let's look at it this way. Let's say Bonucci comes back to Juve, helps him win the Champions League, and because Caldara is sold, Juve is able to hold on to a player, say, like Alexandro, who can help him more win the Champions League now. I think you have to look at it and think about it in those terms if you're Juve. The thing with Caldara is he would bring in a huge profit to Juve because of amortization. They didn't spend a lot to acquire him. So he's exactly the type of player that could bring in a big profit. Now, for Milan, of course, I think this makes a lot of sense. Milan's not going to contend next season. Bonucci's owed a ton of money. You can bring in Caldara, partner him with Romagnoli for many years. That's a home run, too. So, yeah, you could probably make an argument Milan could win the deal that way, but you also have to ask yourself, how much can Bonucci help towards the Champions League? And if by sacrificing Caldara, it means that you can keep a player that can help you more. So that's really how I would look at it in those terms. I certainly see some advantages to Juve thinking in those terms.
All right, David, the last question on the Bonucci topic is, who has the most leverage at the moment in the Bonucci saga?
So let's look at it this way. Milan, Bonucci, now it's public information that he wants to leave. It's going to be very hard for them to bring him back. He counts for an enormous salary for Milan. I think, you know, that's money salary-wise they could spend elsewhere. They already have Musacchio, who I think could have a better season now that he's healthy. You know, I think for Milan's side, I'm not saying they are almost have to sell Bonucci, but almost. Juve, on the other hand, they don't really need Bonucci right now. I'm not sure, you know, if Benatia has worn out his welcome, if they see him as a Stile Juve type player. But they are pretty set at center back. I mean, they do have Caldara. They still have Rugani. They have Chiellini. They are very deep there. So the way I see it, Juve does have more leverage at this time. And I think another factor in this deal is Bonucci's agent, Lucci's very influential agent. I would also look at the fact that he represents other players on Milan, including Suso. So, you know, he has a lot of say for Milan. He was instrumental in actually bringing Bonucci to Milan in the first place. So I think Milan has to also manage the relationship with him. So he's one aspect of the deal that I think is a little bit under the radar that is a factor as well. So Bonucci once again continues to dominate the Calcio Land headline this time of year, and I think it's really, really fascinating. It's so interesting how Bonucci now is like kind of someone, a man without a country is a line that Avon used in The Wire on Stringer Bell. It's like right now, really, Bonucci is on no man's land. It's going to be very interesting to see if he goes to Juve, what he's going to do to ingrace himself with the fans. And if he stays at Milan, that's going to be very hard for him to recover.
Oh, he has certainly become one of the more polarizing players in Serie A, that's for sure. All right, David, let's move away from that topic. How about this? What's the latest on Inter's pursuit of a right back, and what are the odds they sign Arturo Vidal?
So Inter's had a great transfer window. I would say the only real hole they still have is at right back, and right now their projected starter would be D'Ambrosio, who I thought was fairly good last season. But Verschalco, who is the player they've zeroed in, he wants to return to Italy. Inter has a good relationship with his agent. It seemed they've made a really good progress on this front. So they are basically offering the Politano formula, and that's offering a lot of money for the loan and then an option to buy. Now, Inter can't even do a forced option to buy right now because of all the money they spent this summer already. But their thinking is, they tell the other team, if we give you a lot of money for the loan, we're essentially locking ourselves into then buying the player. So it seems Atletico Madrid is coming around on Verschalco, and it looks like there's a lot of momentum for this happening. So look at Inter's defense. They're going to have Handanovic in goal. They'd have potentially Verschalco. They have center backs, De Vrij, Miranda, Skriniar. They have Asamoah at left back. I mean, that's a stacked defense. You could almost make a case that might be definitely in the conversation for best defense in Serie A. Now, as far as Arturo Vidal, maybe there's more momentum than I thought. We talked about it a little bit on Tuesday's show. I wrote about it for ESPN. It looks like Bayern are definitely ready to move on from Vidal, and Vidal in the past has been open about his willingness to join Inter. So let's see. Maybe I was a little bit too bearish on this. Maybe there is some potential for that happening. I think it'd be fantastic to have Vidal back in Serie A too, especially when you look at how Juve are the villain for everyone, like bringing back one of their most popular players, a player that Juve fans still love, having him on Inter. That would be really an exciting storyline. And as you said, Alex, on Tuesday, imagine a midfield with Nainggolan and Vidal. That'd be definitely a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, I think it would cause injuries to the opponent. I really do. So, David, next question. What do you make of Lazio's moves on the transfer market this summer, and who are their next targets?
So it's a summer tradition for me to be overly enthusiastic about both Lazio and Inter. So maybe it's a bias of mine and I tend to overrate them, but I've been saying it for a long time. I think Lazio is one of the best run clubs in Serie A. They sell very well. You know, they wait for the right time to sell a player, get a very good return on them, and they do a great job of finding very good replacements without breaking the bank. And look, you know, you can criticize them for holding on to De Vrij and then losing him for nothing. Up until the last few minutes of the season, that gamble was paying off because they were going to go to the Champions League. Then, of course, it came back to bite them. But they did a very good job replacing him with Acerbi from Sassuolo, an older player, but I think a guarantee in Serie A. Not as good as De Vrij, but keep in mind, Lazio also signed Caceres in January. So that's a nice combination, Acerbi and Caceres. They always shop abroad. They brought in a couple of players, Durnisi from La Liga. I heard he's got a lot of grinta type of left back, could be the heir to Duric. They brought in Berisha from Salzburg, a very highly rated player. These guys could be their new versions of Marusic and Luis Alberto, two players that they acquired without breaking the bank from abroad. And their next two additions that are all but done is they're going to bring back Correa from La Liga back to Serie A to kind of help replace Felipe Anderson, and they are basically on the verge of signing Badelj, who was the former Fiorentina midfielder, played for Croatia off the bench and did pretty well for them as a free transfer in the midfield. So you got to be very impressed with what Lazio has done. They could try to keep Milinkovic-Savic. They'll only sell him for a huge offer. But if you look at Lazio's squad right now, it's really quite intriguing. I always say they are my dark horse team in Serie A, but this summer more than ever, that's for sure.
All right, David. This next question I knew was inevitable, so here it is. What do you mean when you talk about player amortization, and how does that work?
So one thing that there's two things that I really take pride in with the podcast. A is I love, and Alex does a great job of sending me the reviews that we get from outside the United States. There's nothing I enjoy more than reading about Premier League fans who listen to us to get the transfer news, and then they get hooked. They really like the way we cover Serie A, and they're like, oh, I have to start watching this league. And then they're like, you were right, I'm so glad I started watching. So that's by far what makes me the proudest about the podcast. The other thing that makes me proud is trying to make people understand the transfer market a little bit better. I think I see all these tweets about net spend of clubs, but ultimately that means very little. I think the best thing I can say about net spend is it allows people to flex on Twitter saying my club spend less than your club, but ultimately it means very little. So amortization is probably the most important thing in transfer that most people aren't that familiar. So what do I mean by amortization? I'm going to use the Ronaldo contract because it's very easy because of the figures and it's recent. So Ronaldo, for the transfer fee was $100 million signed for a four-year deal. So it means that the cost of that transfer gets spread out over 4 years. That transfer fee gets amortized over 4 years. So what does that mean? Every year, Ronaldo's value to Juve goes down $25 million. So let's say Juve wanted to sell Ronaldo after 2 years. His amortized value at that point becomes $50 million. If a team pays Juve, let's say $70 million for Cristiano Ronaldo in 2 years, they are making a $20 million profit. A lot of people would look at it as they spent $100, they're getting $70, they lost $30 million. No, that's not how it works. Amortization works differently. So you have to divide the transfer fee by the numbers of years on the contract. Now, when a player is sold for above his amortized value, that's when a club does what's called the plusvalenza. In Italy, its profit is a good translation, but not exact translation. So, you know, let's say Juve sold in 2 years Ronaldo for $70 million and his amortized value is $50 million. They get a $20 million profit, which goes into their books as a one-year revenue stream. So that's how amortization works. We'll talk a little bit more in other podcasts because it's a very interesting topic, and I really want our listeners to start thinking of transfers in those terms because that means a lot more than net spend.
I hope everybody wrote that down. All right, next Twitter question, David. What's the latest on the TV rights for Serie A in the United States?
So yeah, today they are releasing finally the schedule in Italy for the matches. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, why does Serie A wait so long to do this? Unfortunately, it's because they have to see what happens with clubs going bankrupt or not. We saw a lot of clubs, you know, go bankrupt. Some clubs getting a point deduction like Parma did. They're going to start the season at negative 5 points. So this is why they wait so long, is to literally see which clubs are going to be able to matriculate in the league. And we still don't know who's going to have the TV rights in North America. The contract with BN Sport expired. As of now, the speculation is that the two front runners for this are either ESPN and Turner Sports. Turner Sports has TBS, TNT, you know them mainly for their basketball coverage, but they bought the rights for the Champions League as well. I think ESPN, you know, is all about having live sporting events now. That's really where the money is. So those seem to be the two front runners. I know in Italy, there's a lot of debates on, you know, why it's so expensive to watch games on TV, and like, look, you know, the rights for leagues are just so expensive, and unfortunately that gets passed on to consumers one way or the other. So let's see what happens as far as the TV rights in North America. The other thing I can tell you, if you speak Italian or if you're a hardcore fan of Serie A and you live in the US, you should look into getting Rai International. That's the Italian stations. The games are in Italian. Supposedly this season they'll be in HD, but you will get at least four matches every weekend on Rai International. That has always been my backup. I've been watching matches on there for years now.
All right, David. Last Twitter question. Let's move away from football. Who is a better director between Quentin Tarantino and P.T. Anderson?
Man, this is one of the toughest questions I've ever gotten on the podcast, because these are definitely my two favorite directors at the time. So you guys all know Tarantino's best films. The first three, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, the first two, I should say, absolute classics. When I saw those movies, I wanted to become a writer. I had never heard people talk in movies that way. Obviously, the skewed timelines of those movies were just so effective. Little did I know that Tarantino was really paying tribute to a lot of directors he loved growing up. And, you know, obviously his movies are incredible. I think Jackie Brown is incredibly underrated. The more I watch it, the more I think that might be his best film. And of course, we have Inglourious Basterds, who's amazing, and Django Unchained. I wasn't that crazy of The Hateful Eight. I like the Kill Bills. It's not really my genre, but his peak movies are hard to top. P.T. Anderson, on the other hand, probably more the older I get, the more I appreciate them. I don't think his movies are anywhere as rewatchable as Tarantino films. Most Tarantino films, if it's on TV, I'll just pop it on and watch for at least a couple of scenes. With P.T. Anderson movies, they're much more heavy movies, if you will. I'd say the most rewatchable of his for sure is Boogie Nights, which I think is an amazing movie. The ensemble cast is great. The ensemble cast in Magnolia is terrific as well. I really love that movie. It's always spoken to me for a lot of reasons. But I think, you know, his masterpieces are the more of the movies he's done recently. I think, you know, There Will Be Blood might be the best movie of this millennium. I think The Master, although it doesn't have Daniel Day-Lewis, the acting in it is just absolutely amazing. The performances from Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman are incredible. That's a really, really powerful movie. Definitely not the easiest movie to watch, but a total masterpiece. I've rewatched Phantom Thread after seeing it in the theater, his last movie. That's really great. So it's a cop-out answer. I would say Tarantino, more fun, easier to rewatch. But I find P.T. Anderson's movies might be slightly better. I think he's an absolute perfectionist. It just really depends what mood you are in. So we love getting questions like that. Please keep them coming using the Culture Land hashtag. Now, I want to thank our listeners. All you guys, your support is tremendous. We love reading tweets, you guys promoting the podcast. You guys are our marketing department. If you're listening to us on your iPhone, please leave us a 5-star rating and leave us a review. And without further ado, let's get into the Malcolm situation and everything going on at Roma with our great friend John Solano. So after the week of Malcolm almost to Roma, ending up to Barcelona, the Giallorossi getting a new starting keeper, we had to bring back our great friend John Solano. You guys know him from IS Roma Press, a great website. He also does an outstanding podcast covering everything Roma. So, John, we have quite a bit to get to. So welcome back to Calcioland. It's a real pleasure to have you on, buddy.
Absolutely. Glad to be back.
Okay, so let's start with Malcolm. This was really quite unique. You know, I've been covering transfers for a long time. Nothing quite like this. You and I were chatting before we started recording, and you pointed out, especially in these times with Twitter, Facebook, and whatnot, it made the situation even crazier than, you know, any other transfer I've seen. So you were covering this very well. You had a lot of exclusive quotes from the agent of the deal. You had excellent coverage of it. And then we had both Bordeaux and Roma sending out tweets on an agreement in principle. So everything looks set. We had fans waiting for Malcolm at the airport in Italy's capital, and then all hell broke loose. So as someone who was covering this story directly as it was happening, I have to ask you, when was the first time you had an inkling that something could go terribly wrong for this deal?
To be honest, the second I saw the tweet from Bordeaux, the alarm bells just started ringing, because in my head, Roma never, unless a deal is finalized, they never put out tweets or announcements that they've agreed in principle pending medical examinations and other documentation. They just don't do that. Munchi mentioned in his interview with Roma TV that he was against the French club putting out a tweet because, as David, you well know, the Roma are publicly traded. They're an SPA on Borsa Italia, which is the stock market based in Milan. So anytime that Roma unveil a player and acquire a player, they have to disclose the financial aspects of the deal. So since this wasn't a final transfer and it wasn't complete, with Bordeaux putting out that tweet, in order for Roma to stay in compliance, there's a governing body called CONSOB. They oversee, their government body that oversees the stock exchange. So when, the second Bordeaux sent out that tweet, the Roma were obligated to either confirm or deny that a deal in principle is agreed to. So they put out the tweet saying the deal was agreed to pending documents and all this other stuff being signed. To me, the wording of the tweet was completely suspicious because it was almost, in my opinion, a come and get me plea for other clubs, because it was worded almost in a way to where we're saying it's done, but it's not really done. Almost like they had a way to get out of it should things go awry. So I have to admit, the second I saw the tweet, I was extremely suspicious, and I had this inkling that this could potentially happen, but I didn't see it turning into what it ultimately ended up as being, which is Malcolm not ending up at Roma.
Yeah, there was definitely very interesting, the stock market aspect that you pointed out about this today. Roma's president Pallotta gave a big interview to SiriusXM, and it sounds like he might try to get some legal action on this. Do you think there's really any basis for this? Do you think it's worth it? Is this more of like a flexing to show the fans we're going to go hard? Do you think there's really anything they can ultimately do about this?
I don't. I mean, I guess really the only reason to do it was just to, I mean, to set the principle that, you know, we're not going to stand for this. But to me, it's wasted energy. But I mean, if Roma feel they have the resources for it, sure, why not? You know, I see a lot of a misdirected anger. A lot of people seem to be more angry at Barcelona, and I don't necessarily blame them. I mean, the deal wasn't finalized. They saw an opportunity and they took it. I'm sure the Roma would do the same thing if they had the opportunity to another club. So I don't necessarily blame Barcelona. I do think they will ultimately go down the legal avenue, but to me, it's just a waste of time.
Yeah, I'm with you there on that one. So let's talk about a thing that's definitely not a waste of time, is reinvesting the money they made from the Alisson sale. And Malcolm seemed like, you know, quite an exciting target. So he's not coming, and then you've been doing a lot of reporting on this. Which players do you expect Roma to go after instead now?
Honestly, I think they're going to take the money that they would have initially invested into Malcolm and look for a player who can alternate with De Rossi in the center of that midfield three. They need a playmaker. They need someone younger. Obviously, De Rossi just turned 35 years old. It's absurd to expect him to play more than one match per week. So they need to get better in that role, just because De Rossi really was only good for about half of the season. But when he was good, he was quite at a top level. But they need another name there. I would like to see Herrera from Porto. He's a guy who I think can add a little bit of versatility to the midfield, not necessarily a playmaker, more of a box-to-box, but I think he could add a different dynamic that Roma don't have. I do think that the midfield is more of a needed position as opposed to the right wing. Obviously, they have Cengiz Under, but they don't have an alternative to him. So I could understand if, you know, they want to go out and purchase the big name attacker. We've seen Neres from Ajax being rumored to Roma, but to me, if I were them, I would opt to more likely spend that big fee on a midfielder, just because I don't think the attack is necessarily the problem. I think it was the imbalance in the midfield that was their biggest issue last season.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there, because when Malcolm seemed to be on his way, like, I wrote a tweet and it was listing all the players that Omaha has up front. And you're definitely right how they're pretty covered there. And in the midfield, that all sees age. It looks like Pastore is actually going to play as a mezzala. Let's see how that works. So I'm with you on them having a look at that, maybe a little bit more. Let's talk, though, about a player that actually did arrive. They brought in the Swedish goalkeeper, Olsen. And look, you know, Allison was fantastic last season. I certainly didn't expect that. I didn't expect it the year before for Szczesny to be the best keeper in Serie A. So let's talk about how you expect to see that drop off, and what's going on with Roma's goalkeeper coach. He seems to be a wizard, because if, let's see if he can do it 3 years in a row, but he's pulled out a rabbit out of his hat, you know, with the previous goalkeepers.
Yeah, he's really highly rated, really respected. I mean, we saw what he did with Szczesny when he first arrived. He was sensational. Same with Alisson, as you mentioned. With Olsen, I'm a little worried, because he's up there in age, whereas Szczesny and Alisson were a little younger. I believe Olsen is just turning 20. He's either 28 or 29. He's in his late 20s. So my biggest fear is that he is what he is. I mean, at this point in his career, how much better can he really get, even with top-level coaching? That's my biggest fear. My next biggest trepidation is he is not good with the ball at his feet. We saw how sensational Alisson was last season with the ball at his feet. It was, I mean, honestly, if Roma had another alternative in goal, Alisson had better feet than some of the midfielders at Roma, just because that was by far their weakest area. And he seemed to be better on the ball than some of them. So my biggest fear is that you completely flip the script and you now have this guy who is clearly not comfortable on the ball. That's not his style. That's not his game. We saw what DiFrancesco did with Alisson, with his ability to play the ball from the back. We saw all the boots forward that led to goals or scoring opportunities. It doesn't look like Olsen can provide that. Now, his reactions, from what I've seen, are sensational, which is great, but for the style DiFrancesco utilizes, I fear that this may not be the best fit.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit in general. This summer, you know, we've had Roma sell Alisson, who we thought was the best goalkeeper in Serie A. They sold, you know, who definitely, I would say, it was their signature player in Nainggolan. And, you know, this was the first summer that Roma, you know, finally resolved their issues with financial fair play. So I wanted to ask you, do you think we're ultimately going to see a different Roma, maybe a club who's better at holding on to their best players? And we can chalk this up to, look, Nainggolan was older. They hinted today, too, there was some disciplinary problems and maybe it was time to move on for him. They still got a big offer. Obviously, they got a record-breaking fee offer for Alisson. Do you see those as offers too good to pass up, or this is just how Roma is going to continue to be?
I honestly, unfortunately, think this is how they're going to continue. And if anyone was able to catch Palota's interview earlier today, he almost hinted at that, about nurturing young players, seeing them grow. And he hinted at there's sometimes offers that you just can't turn down. In terms of Nainggolan, I mean, if they really felt that they wanted to capitalize on his ability and sell him, I mean, you covered this pretty extensively, David. I mean, last summer they could have easily gotten more for him, especially in terms of cash. I was a little puzzled at the way they structured the transfer of Nainggolan from this summer. I mean, to get only $24 million in cash, Santon, who really at this point he's a third option at left back and right back, and then Zaniolo, who could potentially turn into something, but right now he's a Primavera player. For me, the return, especially in terms of just cash, was not nearly enough. So, unfortunately, I do think they're going to continue this way, especially with the situation of the stadium. It seems like there's, a new negative update every day in regards to the stadium, and it feels like it just keeps getting pushed off another year, and then we wait 6 months, and then it's the following year where construction will finally start. So as long as the stadium is not here, I think Roma are unfortunately going to have to continue in this manner.
Let's talk about something a little bit more positive. You mentioned already some of the younger players on the squad now. Which players do you think are going to surprise, people that watch Serie A, maybe people that aren't hardcore followers of the league? It seems every year Roma has a player that comes out of nowhere. Last year we had Alisson in under, but really an outstanding season. Are there any candidates that you see as someone who could break out in similar fashion?
Yeah, I mean, so far in the early on, I would say either Kluivert or Antičorić. They both have looked sensational this preseason. And then Palota even went on to he compared Kluivert to Allen Iverson today, which was an interesting comparison. But anyone
hopefully
who watches
not the off NBA, the field.
Yeah, well, or in practice. So I do think that those two were two to watch. I do think Kluivert is going to be handed a pretty big role just because Peralti has been terrible. He was terrible the last 18 months. El Shaarawy, we all know about him, wildly inconsistent. One match he'll look world-class, the other he'll be just completely anonymous. So I do think Kluivert is going to get a handful of opportunities to prove himself, and he's looked really, really strong so far in preseason. My fear was that at a bigger club, maybe the expectations may overwhelm him and he, may fall face first, so to speak. But he's looked great so far. As Roma supporters, you can only hope that, he adapts as quickly as the likes of Under, who was sensational the last 6 months of this past season. So I think those two are two to keep an eye on. And Čorić, he has been incredible this preseason. You can make a case he's been their strongest player so far. Great technical ability. I do think he'll need some time to adapt, but he's another one who excites me just because Stroltman, De Rossi, just the midfield of Roma in general last season was not good. So for there to be new blood, younger legs in the midfield is certainly welcome.
Okay, guys, so when we do the Euro Fantasy League, Calcioland League, those are two guys to watch. I'm definitely big on Čorić as well. So let's end on this, John. As we're recording, they're pumping out the Serie A schedule. We're now less than a month away to the start of the season. So I've been asking this to all of our guests. Who do you see as the second best team in Serie A at this moment? I'm assuming you're going on the assumption Juve is still a step ahead of the rest. So who do you see as the second best?
Oh, that's tough. I really like, especially with the transfer. I mean, you guys have been on top of it today, David, with Inter maybe getting Bersalco from Atletico Madrid. I mean, if they can get him, that defense they have is incredible. So I'll say Inter for now, but that could potentially change at the end of the transfer market. I think we could all agree, though, that the top four is pretty much cemented in, unless Milan can do some things here in the latter stages of the market. But, I would go with Inter in that case.
Yeah, on paper, I definitely see them as the second strongest, but with them, we really never know. So listen, John, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Everyone, definitely check out IS Roma Press. What I love about that site is, there's a lot of places on Twitter that are aggregating news, giving you all the headlines from different places. And John actually really brings you a lot of original content on. There's great stuff there. You can also read him on Euro Fantasy League and check out his podcast. So, John, thanks so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. Thanks again, guys.